All right, welcome. So I got a special guest, Tiffany Minifee, from Pronto Body Shop in El Paso, Texas. And if I'm correct, you started off in the insurance industry. Were you like an insurance agent or like insurance?
I did a little of everything in the industry. So I actually came from the dark side. I grew up in the insurance industry. My father ran the Texas Department of Insurance Fraud Unit. So I started as an insurance agent, then I moved over to an insurance adjuster, and then I moved over to insurance fraud investigation after that. So I did 20 plus years in the insurance industry.
Wow. So how did you transition to the body shop? Like what, how did that go about?
Well, I was tired of being the bad guy.
Yeah.
And no one ever likes to see a fraud adjuster walk through their door. I dealt with a lot of body shops, a lot of
Yeah.
construction companies. So I had the opportunity to buy out a small shop that the owner had passed away. The family was sort of floundering and didn't know what to do with the shop. And I said, well, I think I can do this. And I just sort of jumped all into it. And it was a hot mess in the beginning. It was a very interesting transition. I had one employee that was part-time, and we went from there figuring it out.
Yeah. So that's very interesting because you came from like kind of like a corporate data-driven industry, analytical, and then you had to go to really like technical side of it and understand that. So like what did you implement or what skills did you kind of bring over from the insurance industry that you applied into the body shop that made it work?
Well, I think two things when you're transitioning and being a small business owner, because that's what most body shops are, is one, you need to have good accounting skills. If you don't have good accounting skills, then you need to find somebody that can do it for you. Because I think that's what I've seen so many shops fail at, is they're great technicians, they're great at what they do, but they're not good at bookkeeping. And ultimately, as a small business, we have to know our numbers and we have to be good at bookkeeping. So if you don't know how to do numbers or you're not confident at it, then you need to find somebody that can help you with that. I think is probably one of the biggest things that I learned transitioning into it. And then also be realistic. Okay, yes, the customer of the, the owner of the car is your customer, but ultimately, who's really paying that invoice? And in most shops, the insurance company is. So we have to have that medium of we need to make the customer happy. We need to do a safe repair. We need to make sure it's done correctly. But we have to know how to play the game of what the insurance wants
Wow,
so
that's
we can get paid for
yeah.
the most that we can without, going back and billing the customers. Because I know a lot of shops are going to, well, hey, the cost of repair was this much and the insurance is only covering this, so the customer is going to have to pay the difference. But if you're starting off in a new shop or, you're in a market that can't support that type of business model, you're going to have to know how to collect the most money from the insurance company. So you need to sit down and really know how to play the game and how to collect the most money from the insurance company possible. I think those are the two most
Yeah.
important things as a shop.
That's a pretty interesting subject, right? Like topic where you said play the game like with the insurance company, because at the end of the day, like they are paying the invoice. And I guess I guess maybe you've probably learned it the same thing as well, is like not to try to argue with them, but try to educate them and communicate them. Because I think a lot of shop owners get into the habit or they fall into quick to being triggered and try to argue with the insurance company. I think that's really like a dead end road if you
I
go
mean,
that route.
yeah, personally for me, coming from the insurance industry, this is what I tell other body shops that I'm friends with. One, don't argue with them, because the moment you get pissed off and start arguing or raising your voice or getting upset, you've lost. Because as an insurance adjuster, the moment somebody got upset with me, deny, deny, deny. I was going to deny everything because you pissed me off. Like, you're not giving me any level of respect. You're not explaining things. I'm just going to deny it. So don't get upset. You're going to have to educate them. And I think the main thing is, and I tell this to shops all the time, don't speak body shop language to the insurance person that you're dealing with. because we speak two completely different languages. The language of a body shop personnel is completely different than the language of an insurance adjuster or an insurance company. So you have to realize if you're using body shop terminology, it's probably going to go over their head. You're going to have to ask, and this is what I told my employees that work for me that deal with the insurance company. You need to act like this is a young adult that has no idea about car repairs, car maintenance, or anything, and explain to them as you would be explaining it to your teenager. And that's how you need to look at it with the insurance adjusters, because a lot of these adjusters have never been in a shop or been on a car.
Yeah.
And especially with how the insurance companies are now transitioning to having everything remote and through video and locking estimates and open shop assignments. They're doing that because they can get away with paying an in-house adjuster cheaper than they can pay a field adjuster because the licensings are different. So you have to realize that these people, they've only ever looked at cars via pictures and via probably CCC estimating, where they're seeing, you know, the page where of a car broken down in a drawing. So they have absolutely no idea what goes into a repair. So we need to explain it to them. And as frustrating as it is, you need to take the time to do that and not use body shop language, because it's going to go over their head.
Yeah. You know what? It's very interesting, because I started off in the body shop industry when I was like 16, 17 years old. And I remember the adjusters would come out and they would have had to have gone to like some kind of training and all this stuff to like, they had to be like ICAR certified. They really knew the ins and out of the repair process. Right. And so nowadays, it seems like the insurance company is not even educating their adjusters, but they're training them on like conflict resolution, or they're training them on communication skills. And what they're doing is they're better communicators to these shop owners, and the shop owners get kind of like they get confused because they don't know what to do. I've seen that.
I mean, and let me just give you an aspect of why the insurance companies are doing this. A field adjuster has to go through state certification. They have to go through state training. They have to be able to handle themselves in the field. So a field adjuster, depending on your years of experience and what part of the state you're in, you're probably making anywhere from $60,000 to $80,000, maybe a little bit more. I think brand new field adjusters start at $55,000. So they're making good money. So there's a loophole in the insurance industry for most states, and that is if you're an insurance adjuster and you're an in-house adjuster, then you don't have to go through a state certification. The insurance company can license you under their blanket license, and so you can technically work as an insurance adjuster, but you're not a field adjuster. You're an in-house adjuster under their blanket insurance license. So if you ever leave that insurance company, you can't go out and work as an adjuster because you don't have a state license. Yeah. So they're licensing them under these blanket license, giving them the basic training, putting them to adjusting how they want things adjusted, and they're paying those adjusters $30,000, $35,000, $40,000. So they're saving a ton of money by doing in-house adjusters. And they're looking at it because as an insurance person, we always look at loss ratio. How much money are we paying out versus how much money we're taking in? And so we're hedging our bets, saying, okay, we're saving so much money on these in-house adjusters instead of having field adjusters. So we're saving all this money. And so we're thinking they're, you know, error ratio is going to be this amount, but that still saves us a ton of money, because even if they're messing up this amount, percentage amount, we're still saving this amount by not having field adjusters. And it's also a benefit for them, because if a body shop doesn't know how to provide the right technology, documentation, the right paperwork, the right pictures, and they just give up, then the insurance company wins also. So, I mean, it's a game. So you have to know how to play the game.
Yeah. So I want to touch on those two things you said at first. You said the accounting and like just being realistic, right? So What are a couple of things that some shops can do to kind of start to get grips of their accounting department or the numbers? Or what are some simple steps to kind of get them moving forward in that process?
I mean, I think for newer shops that are starting out, and the ones I've seen and the ones I've talked to, because I tried to talk to a ton of shops when I was starting out because I didn't know anything of what I was doing. So I needed advice and I needed help. And I think the one thing I found the most shocking was that they don't reconcile their bank statements. So how do you know how much money you have if you're not reconciling your statements?
Yeah.
And then also I think the other thing is they're not tracking invoices and they're not tracking their parts returns. I mean, if you're not using some type of software, management software that tracking your invoices and tracking your parts returns, then you're losing money out. I mean, I just went into a friend that has a shop that's twice the size of mine and we were talking about it and we pulled up his like accounts receivable for invoices that are still open that are due from insurance companies. And he's had stuff that from a year and a half ago. Wow. And I'm like, well, where's the money? He's like, oh, well, we submitted the supplement, but either the check got lost or they sent it to the customer instead of to the body shop because they're not following up on it. So you need some type of management software and you need some type of follow-up system on your accounting. Wow. So like for us, you know, anytime a customer leaves and we let a card go without the final payment because we still have that open supplement because we're arguing about paint supplies or whatever, that we set a task for one of the office employees to follow up and, hey, in 2 weeks, this final supplement payment should be here. If it's not here, you need to call on it. And you need to keep setting that task until we get that money. And the same with parts, you know, parts tracking. How much money do shops lose on parts because they don't follow up on the parts return? I can tell you a ton of money because we're calling on it all the time. Like we went to the point of like used to the dealerships would pick up some of our parts returns, but I couldn't guarantee that they would actually, you know, make it back to where they're supposed to. So we don't let them pick up our returns. We go return them ourselves and we make them sign off that they accepted the return from us. And yes, it takes a little bit of time, but when you're talking of a $700 part or a $600 part, it makes a difference. And so, and the same thing, anytime we do a return, we set a task in our management system for somebody in the office to follow up on that parts return and make sure we got the money back. Because that's money that's ours that's sitting there.
And if it sits there too long, then they won't return it or it just gets thrown away. That's happened before too.
Or people forget them all the time. Or you get so busy working in the daily life of the body shop, you forget to follow up on this money. You forget to follow up on the parts. And I've been victim of it too. I mean, sometimes we forget and I'm like, hey, it's been 3 months. Why haven't we gotten this return from this company? And then I just called on one and they're like, oh, we have your return, but you just didn't call and tell us that you wanted it. So I returned the part, you credited my account and we pay as we go, we're COD, and you didn't think to return my money. Oh, well, you have to tell us you actually want us to send the money back to you. And so, I mean, you have to be on top of that. So, I mean, if you're going to do anything, reconcile your statements, make sure you're tracking and setting tasks to follow up on your invoices and payments from the insurance companies and your parts returns. Those are like the top three things. I mean, everything else you can learn, but you really need to do those three things.
Got it. Let me ask you this. So you recently said you wanted to share your perspective, like how you view things in the body shop industry. Like how do you view things as a businesswoman in the body shop industry?
View them in what aspect?
Like just your perspective. I read an article. You said you wanted to share like a woman's perspective of how you see things in the shop.
Oh, I don't remember the article exactly what I was talking about it.
I think you were referring to like to where like more women are getting into the industry. And I think that I've always said that the body shop industry is like a diamond in the rough. Like there's so much opportunity in the body shop industry, especially for women. Also women technician. Like there's so much opportunity and there's so much money to be made.
There is a lot of opportunity. I think for me, the perspective of being a woman in a shop is that women's viewpoints and way we handle things is very different than men's in some cases. And so you have to use that for the strong point. So all of my estimators that actually negotiate with the insurance company are women. And I've taken that aspect of because we're not going easier on the insurance company. We're actually going a lot harder in some cases, because I mean, the standard thing we hear every single day is, well, nobody else is asking for that, or why should we pay it? But sometimes if you train the women and you train them correctly, sometimes a woman's aspect of how she negotiates and how she speaks is a little bit easier to take than a man, because men can be a lot more blunt, a lot harsher, and women are traditionally a little bit softer around the edges, even if they're asking for the same thing. And so I've just found, I used to have some men adjuster estimators, and we just got a lot better with having the women ask it, and we have been more successful with our women estimators in getting the insurance companies to pay. But it's also finding the tricks of the trade. A lot, you have to sort of notice what's happening in the industry. So a lot of insurance companies are now going to open shop assignments, especially if you're running on CCC, where they want you to put it in the system, lock it, it goes over for review, and then it comes back. Well, we have to remember also, a lot of the insurance companies are starting to test out AI technology. So a lot of the insurance companies are using AI to review estimates and supplements. And there's a very large insurance company that focuses on the military, and they're using that technology for supplements, and anything under $2,000, AI is approving and locking those supplements. So we found that, hey, we have a $4,000 supplement, and we're going to be using that insurance company, send it in as $1,900, get it approved, because they'll approve within 5 to 10 minutes, and then send another one. And so we've been breaking them up. So you have to see what's the trend with the insurance company and what's happening.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. That is pretty interesting. Let me introduce Elaine. Come here real quick. I'm going to introduce you to my wife, Elaine. So she actually runs the office here.
Hi.
This is Tiffany from Poncho Body Shop in El Paso.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'm gonna definitely connect y'all. This is Allison. Come over here so you can meet Tiffany. This is Allison too. She helps in the office too.
Hi.
But I'm definitely gonna connect you with them so y'all can kind of share some ideas and some more strategies on that. But yeah, so my wife runs the office in the front, and she's been doing a very, very good job. And I know you're correct as far as her perspective, as far as like the more data driven she is, like it's really about the detail. I think the body shop is coming more to about the attention's in the detail, the importance is in the detail, credible documentation for the insurance companies, all that stuff is
documentation. If I cannot stress one thing enough, is documentation. Insurance people love documentation, and it's because they have bosses too, and so they, unlike a body shop, you know, they're getting their files pulled every quarter for quarterly reviews, and they'll pull them out. And if they don't have documentation, they're going to be like, well, why'd you pay that? And so then they get in trouble. But if they have documentation, it's a lot easier when they're going through the reviews. And so, and I have adjusters tell me all the time, we pay stuff for you because you give us the documentation, and it just makes life easier for us. And we don't have to worry about getting our butts handed to us, you know, when we have our reviews. And so I mean, and it's ridiculous that we have to provide so much documentation and so much paperwork, and it costs us so much more money to have those people in the office to do all that. But I mean, that's what we have to do to play the game currently and how the industry is.
I think I know a while back, one of our guys that does blueprinting for us, I shared that with him too. I said, before they come out here, just make sure you have your credible documentation. And what that's going to do, that's going to eliminate y'all getting into an argument. It's going to eliminate him sharing his opinion of how he thinks the repair should be done. Just have the documentation, and it eliminates all that, you know, and it makes everything a lot easier. So documentation.
I mean, if one thing, if you don't listen to anything else I say about the insurance industry, documentation, because that will make your life so much easier.
Yeah. I know we don't have much time. I actually wanted to talk to you about your article that you wrote about blending and not blending, but maybe we can actually get on another video and go more into that, as far as like, you know, how you decided to like break those numbers down, and how maybe you have like a pre-repair process. I would like to know more about that. But did I miss anything? Do you want to share anything else?
No, I just think if you're starting off in the industry, just realize your strengths and your weaknesses. Like me coming into the industry, my strength was the insurance industry and accounting. You know, as an insurance person, I have to be really good at numbers, and I was really good at the insurance industry. My weakness was the technical side of the industry and learning that. And that's where I struggled and where I had to learn. So if you're a technician coming into the shop and running a shop, realize that your strength is probably going to be on the repair side of things, and it's not going to be on the accounting and the management side of things. So educate yourself, take classes, you know, listen to books that help you learn how to communicate correctly, how to do your books, how to account, you know, do your accounting and things like that. And do that, because you're, you know, all the time, if you listen to any type of banking advice or accounting advice, you know, all they say is, you know, people that come in that are technicians that then go into running businesses have a greater possibility of failing than people that come in with a banking background that have no direct information or connection to that industry, because accounting and bookkeeping is so important. If you don't know your numbers, you're generally not going to succeed.
Yeah, you're correct. Well, it was a pleasure having you, and I'm definitely going to be connecting you with you again. And I hope to see you soon. If you need anything, reach out to us, let us know. And I'm definitely going to connect the girls to you. So keep a lookout for them. They're going to email you and y'all get connected. Right,
okay,
Tiffany?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.